How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix, Rohan Kadi, and Chris Herring.
This is the Crossover NBA podcast. I'm Chris Mannix, joined this week, as I always am, by my colleagues Chris Herring and Rohan Nadkarni. Guys, this week we are going to break out the panic meter. I know it's everybody's favorite pastime to panic about the results of a specific team or a specific player just a few weeks into the season, but you know, that's what we do here on the podcast. Before we get into that, though, I was at Madison Square Garden last night for the debut of James Harden with the Los Angeles Clippers. Harden was booed vociferously early on by the Knicks crowd, which made me wonder, what does the Knicks crowd have against James Harden? Maybe some of them made that drive up I-95 from Philadelphia to watch James Harden make his debut with the Clippers, but he was loudly booed by the Knicks faithful. Statistically, he was fine, 17 points, 31 minutes, had 6 assists against 2 turnovers, shot like 67% from the floor, made 2 of his 4 three-pointers, only played 31 minutes, and he was being load-managed, you know, for lack of a better phrase, by Ty Lue in his first game of the season. But he was okay with the Clippers. Overall, though, Clippers look bad. And look, you had to kind of expect that they were going to look bad, but you know, they committed, I think it was 22 turnovers. They gave up 18 offensive rebounds. They were out-rebounded overall 48-31. I've got my thoughts on James Harden's fit and how that all works. But Rohan, I'll start with you. What did you make of, you know, James Harden's debut with the Clippers, and kind of what are your takeaways on what they need to work on?
Yeah, I definitely thought that things looked clunky at times. Now, there are a couple factors kind of working against him in this game. One, you mentioned that he was on, you know, a version of a minutes restriction, which I think makes the lineups maybe a little bit trickier for Ty Lue in that instance. Then you get, like, the first good Julius Randle game of the season, and all of a sudden things look a lot worse than they are. It's interesting because, again, they put the ball in his hands quite a bit, and I just thought this team was looking really good with Russell Westbrook on the ball. I think it gave him a purpose when he was on the floor. And I'm just interested to see rotationally kind of how Ty Lue breaks those two up, specifically Westbrook and Harden, moving forward. I think that's going to kind of be the key to this, at least in the early going here, because I think Harden has shown now over the course of his career, off the ball, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Even when he was in Brooklyn and he was playing with Kyrie and KD, he was on the ball a lot, but he was being a distributor, and I think that's the right role for him. I do think defensively, I was actually like kind of impressed early on, at least with some of their off-ball switching.
That they were doing a pretty good job. The operative phrase there early on is...
Yes, yes, I mean, true.
The
Knicks kind of took the lid off there at the end. Yeah, the Knicks kind of took the lid off there at the end, but just as far as communication goes, the off-ball switching, et cetera, I thought they actually did kind of a decent job for their first game together. But yeah, I mean, I think the issue is they have guys, especially in Harden and Westbrook, who are used to having the ball in their hands. Then on top of that, we've seen Paul George especially, I think, pick up some more of that responsibility at this point in his Clippers tenure. So I wasn't expecting fireworks right away. I mean, it was also Harden's, not only his first game with this team, his first game all regular season. So I don't know what kind of shape he was in. I'm not panicked about it just yet. I know we're going to play actual panic meter later. I'd say it went about how I expected it to go, but it hasn't really changed my expectations for what this team can be.
Yeah, Herring, you know, the decision to put Russell Westbrook on the ball to start games, that felt to me and feels to me like a conscious decision to keep Westbrook engaged. Like, you don't want Westbrook look, you don't want him hanging out in the corner. You know, he's not a, I know he made a corner three last night, but he's not a 3-point shooter. He's not a anywhere near the kind of threat he is on the ball, off the ball. And I did like how, you know, obviously they're going to stagger these minutes for, you know, all four of those guys. And I did like James Harden running that second unit. I thought he did pretty well, got guys open looks. But what do you see as far as challenges go after watching that first game?
Well, I think it, a lot of it does go back to really, sure, the four guys, you have to think about how you're going to play them, piece them. But I think Westbrook, Harden's not coming off the bench. I mean, can you imagine how he would blow his top if after all this, obviously the end goal for him being a payday at some point, you know, coming off the bench this year, obviously, you know, that's not going to happen. That might end up being the best role for Westbrook. It's wonderful to think about ways to engage him. But I mean, I think that's probably on the horizon for him soon anyway, if it's not right now. And frankly, you're dealing with two non-shooters for the most part if you start him between Zubac and himself. So that's the challenge that I think we're talking about. Also, you know, you've got a couple of guards that just really aren't known for defense in that lineup, which, like, the reason I imagine you guys were that we all were kind of surprised at how they were defending early on is because we don't expect much from them defensively. So splitting them up could make a lot of sense. I think Russell Westbrook is well established at this point that if he's playing against second units, sure, I understand that you're worried a little bit about losing his engagement, but he's a pretty solid player against second units, especially if he is focused mostly on distributing and just kind of making plays for himself without being relied upon as a jump shooter. So that's kind of, you know, again, it's too early to really take too much from yesterday. I mean, Harden, like you were saying, was efficient, distributing just fine. And I think he still ended up with the biggest plus, you know, the biggest negative in terms of plus minus on the team. So it's too early to tell, really. When Randall plays that well, you kind of have to just throw everything out anyway, especially in light of how poorly he played this season. But I'm curious about a few things. I'm curious about, frankly, the size of the team. This is a team full of wings, and it has been for a while. So we'll see what that means. Like, I've always thought that if anything happens to Zubac, they're toast. And I think that, you know, that I only kind of feel more strongly about that now, just in light of how many ball handlers they've got on this team. That's great. But when you play against teams that have size, what do you do with that?
Yeah, I don't disagree that Westbrook's best role is probably going to be coming off the bench, especially when Terrence Mann gets back in the lineup. I mean, the Clippers did everything they could to hold on to Terrence Mann for a reason.
Sure.
And he just makes more sense in that starting lineup than Russell Westbrook. You mentioned getting him to buy in. That may be tough. I mean, Westbrook over the last, you know, year since he's gotten to the Clippers has found a role with that team. Part of the reason he's been able to find that role is they started him. They put him out there and played him with that starting five. Asking him now to come off the bench, even though he's in a different situation, he's not a max player anymore. He's basically on a minimum contract. But ask him to come off the bench, I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, maybe Russell Westbrook looked north and looked at what Chris Paul's doing up there. I mean, Chris Paul's, again, just having a remarkable sixth man year. He's got, like, how many assists to no turnovers?
I think it's 64 assists to six turnovers or something crazy.
He's had 31 assists in a row without a turnover.
Unbelievable.
Which is exactly why I liked that deal for them. But anyway, go ahead.
But yeah, no, like, maybe Westbrook looks at that and says, look, Chris Paul's having a great impact. He's reinventing himself as a sixth man. Maybe I can do the exact same thing. But right now it looks like a pretty big risk. And you mentioned the rebounding. As we record this, I don't know the status of Mason Plumlee, but Julius Randle went straight into his knee. That did not look good. They're calling it a knee sprain, going to get evaluated on Tuesday. But, you know, cross your fingers for Mason Plumlee, but that didn't look that good. And if he's out for any significant period of time, that makes them so much more thin. Like, now you're just incredibly reliant on PJ Tucker to give you like 30 minutes a game, you know, coming off the bench. So I think Westbrook, or I think Harden is eventually going to be fine with that group, but I think the rebounding is going to be a big-time problem for them. I mean, you know, Ty Lue kind of, I don't say dismissed it because he did acknowledge it was a problem after the game, but Ty Lue was like, look, we've got great rebounders for their position with this group. And that's true. I mean, Westbrook rebounds well. Harden rebounds well. Kawhi rebounds well. Paul George rebounds well. But, you know, the Western Conference is full of huge teams, right? You know, Denver, New Orleans, you know, all up and down the list of big teams that the Clippers are going to have to go through. I look at that as being a bigger problem right now than how Harden fits with this group, Rowan.
Yeah, I mean, the Plumlee thing looked really bad. That was right at his knee. They're going to have to go out and try to find some kind of big man, I think, to soak up some of these minutes.
With what?
I mean, they got to see who's out there on a minimum, open up a roster spot. I mean,
you want to go bring Boogie to town?
I honestly, why not? Like, at this point, why not? Just get everyone who was, like, briefly an All-NBA candidate in 2017, that era, and see how it works.
Dwight Howard, are we pulling?
Yeah. There are a lot of reasons why they're not going to be going after Dwight Howard. Yeah, but I mean, I think you have to. I mean, Biombo getting picked up by the Grizzlies actually kind of hurts them there, but they're going to have to find
Biombo?
Help. But
Biombo was like plus 18 his debut.
The Grizzlies 1-0 in the Biombo era.
Wow, Bismack Biombo.
Yeah.
Where you been?
They got to find help, but I just, listen, it was one game. Who knows how, you know, maybe they all went out with Harden the night before or something like that. Can't be ruled out that you know, that he welcomed himself to the team properly. It's his first game. I'm willing to give it a little bit of a week. But the Plumlee thing is, you're smart to bring that up because they have like a sneaky solid center rotation between Zubac and Plumlee, neither of whom are great, but both of them are pretty good in their roles, and I think they're going to have to find, you know, they've been committed to playing big. As much as we talk about Ty Lue playing the small ball card when he needs to in the playoffs, they've been committed to playing big the last couple of years, so I do think they're going to need help with that position.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, some of the stuff that they were screwing up last night, you know, there was one sequence in the first half where Harden drove to the basket, threw it to the corner, and Norman Powell and PJ Tucker were standing there. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you know is going to resolve itself over time. But the rebounding might not. They may need to go out and try to find somebody. The problem is they've given away quite literally all their draft capital. They don't have much in the way of cap flexibility at the moment. They're going to have to hope that, you know, somebody materializes maybe on the buyout market or before then to give them some help up front. Because if Plumlee's out for any period of time, that's going to be problematic.
I'm pro Boogie and with the Clippers. Yeah.
He was a Nugget, right? He was a Nugget for a minute, so you're therefore
exactly
obligated
exactly
to be pro Boogie, yeah, in that situation. All right. So let's break out the panic meter and look at some of the teams and players that are off to some ragged starts. And I want to start with the Lakers, because this was a team that I think a lot of people expected to hit the ground running. They brought the band back after last season, where they went 16-7 in the second half, advanced to the Western Conference Finals, nibbled on the fringes in trades and free agency, and really looked like a team that had the potential to start fast. Anthony Davis looked like he was in great shape and all that. Lakers right now are 3-4 on the season. They are coming off back-to-back losses in Florida, a 19-point loss to Orlando, a 1-point loss at Miami. You look up and down that roster and there are problems everywhere. The rebounding is a big problem right now for the Lakers. They're getting kind of run off the floor in the first quarter of many of these games. Herring, what's, you know, let's start with a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being no big deal, 10 being, you know, catastrophe. what's your panic meter right now for the LA Lakers?
Probably, I mean, it's still so early, but I mean, I would probably give them like a 5 or a 6, just because I think we were expecting so many of these moves to really, really bolster them. And, you know, granted, they haven't had everybody every single game, but there are certain things that just lineup wise you're already kind of seeing that don't work as well as maybe we were thinking, or things that they're going to need to tweak. Jared Vanderbilt, I really like him as a player. It's difficult sometimes for him as far as an offensive fit with this team. You really like the way he rebounds. You really like the way he gets after it and defends. But is there another option out there? And it's not someone like Christian Wood, as much as we like his shooting ability. Is there someone you could plug in that's a better offensive fit that you don't lose all your defensive marbles, you know, plugging in. So there's just some things like that. And it's interesting. I was seeing someone, I can't remember someone I follow on Twitter, saying that that's a team that, you know, if you could talk the Bulls into dealing with you and get maybe one more creator and one more guy that can kind of play that role of someone that's a big, but they can defend, you know, they're versatile defending wise and stuff like that. And they don't kill your offense the way that Vanderbilt sometimes can, just because he clogs things, that, you know, you've got a couple guys, and one of whom used to play for the Lakers and Crusoe, that you would love to get. But it becomes that question of who would you even deal to make it happen? But the Lakers do have some flaws, some of which I didn't really foresee. Torian Prince, getting him back and trying to plug him back in just to give them more shooting and more versatility is great. But they're starting more slowly than I thought they would. You know, they've had some close calls where they could have won a game here or there. Maybe it makes you feel a little bit differently about it. But these issues seem to be ones that aren't necessarily going to go away.
I'm giving them a panic. What was your number, Herring?
Like a 5 or a 6. Maybe like a 5.5.
I'm going to go with a soft 7 here, only because Anthony Davis had what someone termed a spasm of the groin last night. Some are calling it a hip spasm. if AD's hurt, they're in trouble. No question about it. It's insane how reliant this team still is on LeBron.
Yeah.
Just considering they fall apart whenever he's not on the floor. Gabe Vincent has gotten off to a slow start this year. I get it. At the same time, I'm not sure about just D'Angelo Russell in the starting lineup. And then you couple that with Reeves has not looked like the same player that we saw in the playoffs and down the stretch of last season. I mean, Vanderbilt's been hurt. So, you know, they've had some issues. It comes down to what we saw last year with this team, particularly like after the trade deadline and when LeBron, you know, had his foot injury, was they could survive without him. They won a bunch of games without him. Reeves was fantastic. And it looked like they finally had a coherent team. But the fact that we're right back to square one, which is we need LeBron to do everything for us and we fall apart whenever he's not on the floor, and now we're dealing with an AD injury, is like, that spells major doom for them. Although, you know, AD said after the game last night he's confident he'll play Wednesday in Orlando. I mean, that you could read that in multiple ways. One, like, okay, good, he's going to play. Another thing is he going to have to fight through something week two? He's just in kind of a no-win situation. He's just in a no-win situation with injuries. Wildly, this team has looked its best with Wood, LeBron, and AD sharing the floor. Like, they were throwing Christian Wood out onto Kevin Durant. Like, they maybe have something there, but right now, with AD dealing with something, you know, my antenna are up.
If Christian Wood turns into a serviceable defensive player, it'll be one of the greatest accomplishments in coaching history. Because
Darvin Ham gets coach of the year immediately.
He has been moved around from team to team. He's been in bad situations. He's been in pretty good situations. And the common denominator has been he doesn't play defense. He was a 20-point-per-game scorer who got a minimum contract this offseason because he couldn't play defense. If Darvin Ham can turn him into even an average, incredibly impressed. My panic meter is sitting right around a 5 right now. It would be higher if the Lakers were at full strength, but I'm kind of waiting to see what this team looks like when Rui Hachimura is fully healthy, when Jared Vanderbilt is back into the mix. Those were two guys that played a big role in that second half surge last year. Rui Hachimura fit like a glove after being traded over in January. Vanderbilt, high energy guy, rebounding guy, defensive guy for that team in the regular season. I'd like to see what they can do. I am concerned about the rebounding. You know, Darvin Ham has been talking about effort. That's never good when you're talking about effort 6-7 games into the season. D'Angelo Russell's always going to be a concern at the point guard position. You know, that's never going to change. And Austin Reeves, to your point, Rohan, has not looked like a guy that I thought he would look like.
He doesn't look like a bargain contract so far.
No,
so
not yet.
Can we talk about how that has kind of quietly played a role in a couple of guys this season, just to start with the idea of it seems to have worn guys down, you know, the guys that played during the summer. Reeves, certainly. I know Josh Hart was pretty vocal in saying that he just felt tired kind of exhausted, and he had a little bit of a slow start. He's had a little bit of a slow start for the Knicks. You know, it's guys can come out of that playing really well. I think obviously Anthony Edwards is someone that has looked fantastic so far. But
he was awesome.
Anthony Edwards down the stretch last night. What my God!
Outplayed Jason Tatum.
Just incredible. But you know, just to the point, it seems like it's worn guys down. So it makes me wonder if these guys get a breather. I mean, the All-Star break is nowhere near upon us yet, but Austin Reeves has looked a step slow.
Can we also talk about how Mannix is all about rebounding today? He's just all over the glass. I really respect
rebounds equal rings.
It does, dude. Yeah. He's
rebounds,
like
no rings.
Mannix is like board man gets paid. You'd think someone with all that hair gel would be all about the threes, you know, all the flashy stuff, but he's coming in here saying, no, I want rebounders on the floor. I love it.
Don't hate Rowan. You're the only guy on this podcast wearing a hat right now, okay? Don't hate. I'm willing to give the Lakers, not a pass, of course, but I'm willing to wait a little bit longer before I raise that panic meter up on the Lakers. Hashimura, I had high expectations for him. I mean, he spent the offseason attached to the hip to LeBron James. That you figure that would pay dividends at some point. It just hasn't, you know, at this point. And Vanderbilt, again, high energy guy, you know, defended multiple positions. He's a valuable piece to them, especially in the regular season. So I'm going to five.
What do you guys think happened after that first game when we all thought LeBron was going to be playing 30 minutes a night? And now it's just right back to LeBron being LeBron.
LeBron said, I'm not doing that no more.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't, you know, everybody kind of focuses on minutes like played during games. Like, even if a guy's 38, almost 39 years old, like it shouldn't be that big a deal to play 35 minutes a night. I mean, just don't practice as hard as you used to. I mean, like the Tom Thibodeau stuff, to go back to something else, like the Tom Thibodeau stuff, the criticism he always received was for like running his guys out there 38, 39, 40 minutes a night. I never thought that was the problem. The problem was the long practices. Like, don't practice, you know, for 2.5, 3 hours in between. Like, give these guys a break. As long as Darvin Ham is keeping his foot off the gas at practice, I have no doubt that he is. Like, he's going to follow the advice of LeBron when it comes to keeping him fresh. I don't think that's a major issue. Like, LeBron is what he is. Like, he's still going to be a dominant offensive player when he needs to be. He's not the defender he used to be, and he's never going to be. And I don't care if he's playing 30 minutes a night or 35 minutes a night. That's just not going to happen with the consistency that it once happened in his heyday. So I think this is where we are. He'll play 35 minutes a night, you know, most of the games for the rest of the season. All right, I want to talk about Memphis, which got its first win on Sunday.
Squeaked it out, too.
Over the vaunted Portland Trailblazers. Bismack Biyombo, right off the street, steps in the starting lineup, plays pretty well for Memphis, which allowed Jaren Jackson to play the four where he needs to be. Look, Memphis is not getting John Morant until mid-December at the earliest. They're probably not going to get Brandon Clark back at all this season. I mean, I have no, you know, reporting on that. But I'm just saying, if a guy tore his ACL in March, expecting him to come back and play in any meaningful way.
Hey, wasn't it Achilles, season, too? I think it's Achilles, which is even worse. Yeah.
Was it my bad? Yeah, Achilles, no. Sorry. Yeah, worse.
Yes,
which is
worse.
Even worse than an ACL. Expect him to come back and play meaningful minutes is just not realistic. My panic meter for the Grizzlies is at about an 8 right now, because when Morant comes back, he will resolve some of their half-court issues. But again, Brandon Clark, unlikely to be back. Steven Adams is not coming back, and that was a devastating injury to them because he has been, wait for it, their best rebounder, big man, in the middle. Unless Bismack Biyombo turns into something he has never been in his professional career, to give them 30 minutes a night at the center position and play to the level or close to the level of Steven Adams, I don't, you know, I've been thinking about the Grizzlies in terms of a gap year, you know, this season, like where, you know, they're probably still going to claw their way into the play-in mix, but asking any more of that, given everything that's happened here, just doesn't feel realistic. So, Harry, I'm at about an 8 right now with the Grizzlies. Where do you stand?
I think you have to give them at least that. At least they got the one victory over Portland. But it just, you know, I think it's just their injury stuff coupled with Ja being out that it's really hard to look at them and feel good right now. Like, what are the good takeaways. Jaren Jackson's been playing well, been playing better, been playing relatively foul free, which that's something that is meaningful. And maybe when you talk about gap year, what is the point of a gap year? It's to kind of work on things, work on yourself without being in school for that year, to better yourself in some way. And so maybe there are ways, you know, maybe Jaren Jackson with him and Bane kind of being the main two guys, I guess, along with Smart, maybe they develop their offense further without Ja being in the mix here for these first 25 games. There are things they can work on, but it's really hard to view them as a contender. To be real with you, I think we're already past the point. Steven Adams' injury alone before the season, I think already I kind of was already out on them from that standpoint. I was willing to think that, you know, maybe they can throw together a run. They've done well without Ja before, you know, without him in the lineup before. They're getting Adams back. Maybe they'll get Clark back. And then you get development from Bane, from Jaren Jackson. I was already off that bus, you know, when Adams got hurt. So, you know, from that standpoint, it's not even really a concern for me anymore because I don't really see it happening for them this year. It probably is more of a gap year. So my concern would either be off the charts or in A, because I just don't really see it for this team.
I'm at a straight up 10 for the Grizzlies, y'all. I just don't know how much time they can afford to lose. I mean, they're what? They're 1-6 now? Mm-hmm. We're 1-6. Ja cannot come back until December 19th. I'm looking at their schedule. They have no easy games. I mean, you could say they got Utah twice. They already lost to Utah. The Spurs, they got San Antonio on the road. That's maybe their easiest game. Guess what? We want to talk about rebounds. Wemby is just going to eat glass in that game going up against this front line. You're going to throw Biombo out against Wemby. They're in trouble, man. And there's no bad teams in the West this year outside of Portland, and they already lost to Portland once, and they were on their way to losing to Portland a second time until they went on a massive run here. I mean, they got both LA teams. They got Boston. They got Phoenix, Dallas twice, Utah twice. They got the Rockets twice. Don't sleep on the Rockets, especially in the Dylan Brooks revenge game. So I'm
Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks has been balling, by the way. So I'm pretty panicked about the Grizzlies. I was panicked about them when they were like 0-4. They've just lost so much depth. I mean, yes, they've had guys out of the lineup and they're coming back, but I think this is a team that's just overmaneuvered the last few years. Like, letting Kyle Anderson walk was tough. I know that they had to budget for some of these big extensions they had to sign, but they just kind of let him go for nothing. They've kind of been consolidating some of their first-round picks into players like David Roddy, who are not terrible, but I don't...
Not good either.
Yeah, they're not helping you in a situation like this when guys are out and you need players to go to another level. So I don't know where the help comes from. I mean, shout out to Biombo, who is one of the most, I think, like, thankless players in the league. Always does a solid job wherever he goes, but I don't think that's saving them. They're in trouble. Just looking at their games between now and December 19th, when Ja's eligible to return, and that's assuming Ja can come back and they hit the ground running immediately. I mean, it's going to be just, I think, a dogfight for them to get into that 9th, 8th spot of just the play-in this year, and to expend that much energy just to get that far. I don't know. Like, the Lakers kind of did it last year, but they also had LeBron miss a couple weeks, which I think helped them in some ways too. So I'm pretty nervous about the Grizzlies. And, you know, it gets to a point where you wonder, like, what does their record have to be when Ja comes back, where they just try to do a stealth tank? Now, the player participation policy may have something to say about that, but you have to consider it if you're, like, you know, 5-20. I'm not saying they're going to be 5-20, but, you know, one more injury. If Bane gets hurt, Jaren Jackson gets hurt, they
could
be in
trouble. That's the thing. Yeah, because Ja might not even... I mean, Ja's track record of staying healthy... I mean, granted, missing 20 games a year is not unusual anymore for anyone, but just because he's sitting out these games doesn't mean he's guaranteed to stay healthy for the ones that he's eligible for. I hadn't even thought about the player participation thing. I haven't tracked out when their national TV games are and stuff like that, but it's yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm almost past the point of concern just because I don't really see it. And you could make a logical argument at this point, assuming that they've got their draft pick for this year, that makes more sense for them to just just kind of, I don't know.
I have a question about the player participation policy, by the way. This crossed my mind the other night. Sorry to derail us. But we've thought, you know, a bunch of times about how, you know, some stars are going to miss 20 games and they're not going to make all NBA, which is going to elevate some guy to get to all NBA that maybe is going to get a supermax that they don't deserve. I'm not saying that a team is going to do this, but I'm just going to use this player as an example. Bam Adebayo did not sign an extension before this year because he wants to make all NBA. And if he makes that, he's eligible for a supermax. What's to stop the Heat, if Bam gets hurt, from saying, hey, you know what? Maybe you should rest an extra few games and keep him from playing on 65. I'm not saying they would do it because they need the wins, obviously, but like,
no, they wouldn't do that. Like that, you know, that shit gets out and, you know, you're going to have a hard time with players. Like,
right. I'm just saying teams, it's going to happen at some point. It's going to happen at some point where
whatever team tries stuff like that is going to be in for a world of blowback. That's for sure. You know, in the moment and long term, I can't see that.
Okay. All right. Ultimately. Just happening. A conspiracy.
Ron, you mentioned the guys they have playing right now in Memphis. Zaire Williams is one. David Roddy is another. Two recent first round picks. Prior to those picks, the Grizzlies had a lot of success, mm-hmm. you know, drafting in the back half of the first round. Desmond Bain was a great draft pick. Brandon Clark was a great draft pick. Zaire Williams was not. David Roddy, you know, give him a little bit more time, but doesn't look like he's that guy. Now, you got to, context is king here, right? Like, you can't say Zaire Williams is bad. Here's who the Grizzlies should have picked if there's nobody around that pick who they should have picked. And looking at that draft class, you've got, you know, James Bouknight, who's going to be out of the league maybe next year. If you're not getting your third-year option, or what is it, fourth-year option, picked up by Charlotte, that's a problem. Josh Primo has had a million problems there. But Chris Duarte is pretty good. Moses Moody has looked okay. Corey Kispert has looked pretty good. Alperen Sengun has looked pretty good. Trey Murphy has looked better than pretty good. So there were guys on the board that Memphis could have drafted instead of Zaire Williams. Same thing with David Roddy. Peyton Watson was on the board when David Roddy was picked. Now you can say, oh, well, Peyton Watson, you know, that's one guy. Well, good teams get those one guys. That's why Denver's a good team, because they keep getting. Well,
look at what Strother did last night. He was going off.
Man. Denver's like,
oh, my God. That
looked like Anthony Edwards at the end of the game. Yeah.
They've got, I mean, if I'm, look, if I'm a, again, this is veering off topic here, but if I'm like a team that's rebuilding, like I'm tapping into that Nuggets front office. Like, I'm looking around at, you know, Tommy Bolsettis in that front office and some of the other guys that are there and say, all right, well, Tim Connelly did it there. Calvin Booth is doing it there. You know, maybe there's some in the water spot that you guys kind of know what you're doing when it comes to.
That's what the Bulls said, too.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's what the Bulls said.
Although, to say this, like, Arturis went a completely different direction. Yes. Like, Arturis got that job, and we're going to get to the Bulls in a minute. Arturis got that job and was like, you know what? I'm going to get this team to 500. We're going to be a 500 team and a playoff team.
The Lonzo thing also killed him because he was fantastic. Yes. You know what,
that's Lonzo, fair to
like,
include
let's also not act surprised that Lonzo got hurt. Like, he had been battling.
Okay, but he didn't just get hurt. He got, like, you can't
control for a career-ending injury, potentially. You know, like, and they were in first place when he got hurt. You know,
They do get relief because of that. But Lonzo had a history of injury.
Yeah, sure. Yes. So it's that's fair.
Not a stunner that he got that he got hurt. But, you know, that to me is one of the bigger problems Memphis is dealing with right now. The guys they are plugging into holes are just either not ready to play or can't play. And that's going to be a problem there. Not, I mean, look, Dylan Brooks, if Dylan Brooks was still there, I don't know how much of a difference he would have made. Like, that team has its own problems, but it is kind of funny right now.
It's very funny. Yeah.
And they have a better record than the Memphis Grizzlies at the moment. So that's something that's certainly worth watching. Their first game against each other, I think it's November. It's in like 2 weeks. It's coming up.
So that's, they got a home and home too. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
All right. Let's talk about the Chicago Bulls because we brought them up just a moment ago.
Yeah.
They got a win last night, so they're 3-2. Wow.
Sorry.
I can't.
There's nothing to say about this.
My panic meter on them is 9.5 because mostly because I know exactly how this story ends this season. It ends with them at best clawing their way into a play-in spot, at worst finishing with a bottom five or Eastern Conference record and being outside of the playoffs looking in. And I don't see any way around that. I don't see a transaction that is going to make them significantly better. There's no player coming back from injury, because Lonzo's not coming back this year, that's going to make them significantly better. I mean, a couple of games ago, Zach LaVine had one of the most remarkable stat lines I've ever seen. Like 51 points and zero assists, and he was like a minus overall. Like, does that even happen in today's NBA? You know, they can't shoot threes. They don't defend all that well. there's nothing to get excited about with Chicago. Billy Donovan's hold on that job feels tenuous at best. I think Billy's a good coach, but I don't think it doesn't look like, I should say, that he has a firm grip on that locker room right now. I don't know, Rohan, we'll start with you on this one. Like, what's your panic meter on the Chicago Bulls? Because I don't see any way this team can transact their way to contendership in the Eastern Conference.
My panic meter on the Bulls like broke a long time ago, and now it's like sunk into some weird like depression. This team's beyond panic. It's just bleak is what it is. Like, they've been awful with Vooch, LaVine, and DeRozan on the floor together. Like, terrible. And if you're not even like winning minutes with your best guys on the floor, it's like, what are we doing here? You know, it'd be one thing if it's like, oh, we can't find the right combo. Our bench stinks. It's like, no. When we have three, like, you know, quote unquote, all-star level players together on the floor and we still stink, it's like, it's beyond panic. And to me, they just got to blow this up. We all know where it's headed.
What do you think is stopping them at the moment? Like, I've been trying to get my arms wrapped.
I mean, they were in
that,
the play-in last year.
Payroll that's in the top half of the NBA. Like, that's not where you want to be.
You know, that year DeRozan was going nuts. They gave the Bucks like a little bit of a fight in the first round. I get it. I think staring into the abyss of a rebuild.
You've also got DeRozan as a free agent, Rohan, this summer. Like,
and
you know,
they
you
need to
pay him,
and right, and they need to recoup some picks. I mean, that Magic trade they made—it's one of the worst trades in the NBA in the last few years to get Vooch. I mean, Wendell Carter Jr. has been great, and they gave
I love
up the
Franz
pick.
Wagner. Franz yeah, Wagner's a stud,
the
straight
pick
stud.
To turn it to Franz Wagner,
so. And then watch Markkanen become a star in Utah. Yeah. You know, so like it doesn't end.
I don't know, but the Markkanen one, like, you know, we talk about giving him a pass on Lonzo. Like, nobody really wanted Markkanen that summer. Like, that everyone, like, he went to Cleveland first,
does it not speak to the lack of development with this organization? Yeah. Though I think it has to. And you know, maybe there are times that they deserve credit. I think Lonzo was a gamble and a smart one because it fit the team. You can't control for health necessarily, but I don't know. It feels like there have been some mistakes here, for sure.
I did that Lowry story last year and went to Utah and asked her about his experience in Chicago. And Lauri Markkanen is a very like soft-spoken and respectful guy. But I could just see in his eyes when I asked him about Chicago that he was just like, I'm just fucking sick of those guys, is how it described the look on his face. So, yeah, I think they should get blamed for that. I mean, yeah, they got to blow it up. And especially when you've made the trades that you've made and lost the picks that you've had, like, you just got to go out and start making up for that. And they have guys who are going to get good returns. Even DeRozan on an expiring deal is going to get you something good back. Caruso, if they trade Caruso, there'd be a legit bidding war for Caruso amongst pretty everyone.
Caruso's the most valuable guy in that roster.
Yeah.
He is the most valuable guy in that roster because he plays two ways and he's on a reasonable contract. Like, he would bring back the biggest return.
So, yeah, to me, it's not even panic at this point. It's just like, I'm like throwing my arms up. Like, what are we doing here? Why are we still ignoring reality?
Herring, I want to get your number on this. But first, like, there's incentive to blow it up, right? Like, the Bulls have their own first-round draft pick this year because They have to hold on. They would have traded if they could, but they have to hold on to that first round pick. So they have their pick, which looks like it could be a top 10 pick if they mail it in. Next year, they owe a first round pick to San Antonio as part of the DeMar DeRozan trade. That first round pick is top 10 protected. So if they are bottoming out, they can have their first round pick next year as well. If the rebuild goes even longer, that first round pick in 2026 is top 8 protected. So there's a scenario where they could hold on to their draft picks for the next 2 or 3 years. And look, I don't love the Bulls' young talent, but I'd like to see what Patrick Williams can do if you just hand him the keys and say, go do your thing. DeSonmo is good. We'll see what he's got. I'm not a huge fan of Kobe White, but maybe you can see what he's got. All I'm saying, Herring, is there is incentive to be really bad for the foreseeable future. Because if they're middle of the pack and have like the 12th pick in the 2025 NBA draft, it's going to be a party in San Antonio.
I mean, there was incentive from where I sat last year to do that. I mean, I think we can all agree and raise our hands and say, and I know I've even written this just since the season started, the Raptors have, you know, Scottie Barnes has emerged. Let's say that. We can say that positively about the Raptors. We can also say that even with him having emerged, they've looked really, really, really bad for most of the time on offense this year. Like the sort of thing you were talking about with guys standing in the same corner for the Clippers. Well, that happens because they're new to playing with each other. The Raptors are not a new group. They kept that team together last year. And I know you're like, well, I asked you about the Bulls. Why are you talking about the Raptors? They look a mess offensively, and they didn't trade a lot of the guys they could have traded last year, the Raptors. They let Fred VanVleet walk for nothing and go get $40 million a year or whatever it was from Houston. And I think they were the most guilty of that because they had so much talent to pick away. But the Bulls had to have been right behind them with LaVine, DeRozan, Vooch, who they ended up bringing back because they couldn't really think of anything else to do with them on a new deal. And then you have guys like Patrick Williams who wanted considerable money this offseason. The Bulls said no thanks. And I imagine that's one of the biggest things that you're really looking forward to or thinking about this year is like, we have to develop him and we're putting all our hopes in him because if it's not him, if he's not our guy, then what do we really have that we're looking forward to at this roster that we can count on, that we can develop? Dosunmu is a nice young player. He had a bad second year after a really solid rookie year. Kobe White played well last year, but you know, there's a question of still, does it make more sense to have him with your starting group, your bench group? Patrick Williams has been concerning this season since the preseason, mm-hmm. in my opinion, where Billy Donovan pulled him out of a preseason game 2.5 minutes in after starting him. And obviously was asked about it after the game. And he said, oh, the reason I pulled him out is because we talked about this before the game, that I need to see energy from him. I need to see this. I need to see that. And within 2.5 minutes, I didn't see it. And he just didn't get back in the game. That's concerning when it's a contract year for him. I hear you. And I will tell you that my friends are huge Bulls fans, me being from Chicago. One of my best friends is completely out on Patrick Williams because of the sort of thing we're talking about. And he basically, to your point, Chris, has said, why would you have faith in his ability when you hand him the keys, if when he's like a fourth or fifth guy in the current lineups that he plays with, that he's not showing more aggression, that he's not able to score and make use of the fact that there's all this defensive attention on LaVine and on DeRozan. And I can't really disagree with them. I can look at examples of guys that have bloomed and kind of blossomed after a situation where there were dominant ball handlers. I think of Victor Oladipo as one of the main guys that I watched that happen with after he played with a couple teams, after he played with Westbrook and OKC. But It's just concerning, and it really does hearken the question of, like, why did they not trade anybody at the deadline last year? It just didn't make much sense to me. And you're right. They can benefit from losing. So I just don't – I wouldn't see the upside here in going for it and being a play-in team again. They could do that, but there's very clearly nothing about this team that stands out. There's nothing about this team that makes me think that even if they did win the play-in round the way Miami did, that they would be on a track to go to the finals. There's nothing about this team that would say that. At least Miami, there's a culture of that, and you know that they've been around those parts before with this group. The Bulls, that's not true.
No, Miami defended at a high level. They had proven playoff performers, or at least one, well, two. I mean, Kyle Lowry has done it. You know, Jimmy Butler has done it. Bulls don't have any of that. I just don't know what the end game is for all this. Maybe if you're the front office and you're in a position where you have to rebuild, maybe you wonder if the Bulls ownership group is going to allow you the leeway to do that. I think the next move probably for the front office is to make a coaching change and see if that has any impact.
But they extended Donovan, was it last year?
I don't even think
that they're going to do that, because it's not an ownership
group
that generally wants to...
Yeah, you're right. Bulls ownership doesn't do anything. They move glacially on stuff like this, and they give. And I give credit for that. I mean, give guys some rope. I think that's respectable. More teams should operate like that. But you have to wonder, given what you've seen early on.
And it's such a shame what it's done to Patrick Williams too, because who was
Patrick
it
Williams
they...
has done a lot to Patrick Williams? Though.
Sure, but I mean the situation that he's in. I mean, he's playing next to these three high usage guys. I don't know that he's been put in a position to succeed necessarily or turn into the kind of player that Scottie Barnes is. I mean, Barnes, even with Siakam and Ananobi, like, they give him the ball. They're like, Scottie Barnes, like, you're running the show. And it's kind of completely turned over to his team. I'm not saying Patrick Williams could have been that, but yes, he struggled this year. Part of that, I just think he's not in a good situation to really grow as a player. Who was it that they were holding out Patrick Williams in a trade for a couple years ago? Oh God, I'm gonna have to look that up. They were like refusing.
There were
to
a lot of people that wanted Harrison Barnes back for, but I'm not sure.
But it's just a bummer. It's a bummer to see what's happened to a lot of the careers there.
Like, if I'm the Bulls, though, I'm afraid to. And this is again like the debate I've had with my friends about it is I don't even think just off the last couple guys that you had that were kind of like 4 or 5. Or, you know, even maybe 3-4 when you include Markkanen. You talked about Wendell Carter. They developed very quickly after leaving Chicago, even with teams that I don't think people thought very much of in terms of Orlando. You know, Cleveland I think is fine. But I if you're the Bulls, like, what is there to lose by continuing to roll with him, even when he's disappointing you, quite frankly? He's still, for his career, a 40% three-point shooter. Not on many attempts. We can acknowledge that. But he's, what, 6'9"? He's athletic. He can move. He has not shown enough aggression. There are times where he doesn't look completely focused, which that was my thing, is Billy Donovan is not someone that is yanking people by the collar out of games, generally. He's a very mild-mannered coach. So for him to have that conversation with him before a game and then 2-3 minutes into that game have to pull him to set an example in the preseason in a contract year, it was just mind-blowing. But I don't know. It's very hard to make sense of what Chicago is doing. It's, you know, it's a full-throated criticism, I think, but it is a big what-if, I think, for them with Lonzo, which it feels weird to say that, but they did really look like they were a really, really good team before that injury. And, you know, but that was a while ago. You have to find ways to kind of plug the hole, and they have not done that.
Yeah, almost 2 years ago now that Lonzo played his last NBA game. I mean, the Bulls, I mean, they had a players-only meeting after the first game of the season.
Game one.
Players-only conversation, whatever way you want to frame it. It was players-only in that locker room. That's not a great sign. All right, last one. I'm going to go to a specific player now who definitely redeemed himself temporarily on Monday night, and that is one Julius Randle. Julius Randle seems to have good every other seasons, right? Like, you know, 2021, he's all NBA, shoots like 41% from three, looks great. The year after, he's in the low 30s from three-point range, and people are wondering what's going on. Last year, all NBA season, looks great, looks like he's got his mojo back. In the first 5-6 games of this year, he looks terrible. He looks like he's just on another planet. And, you know, watching that Milwaukee game on Friday, you know, just a brutal game for Randle. Tibbs, who is very reticent to call Randle out after games, had some comments that seemed like they were very directly pointed at Julius Randle. So, Herring, we'll start with you on this one. What is your panic meter right now for Julius Randle? Because it's pretty clear the Knicks can't win at a high level unless Randle emerges as, you know, either a number two or a number three scoring option on that team if you count RJ Barrett as number two.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell. Look, I'll say it's a six, which is probably about what it was coming into this season anyway. Maybe slightly higher, maybe a seven. But anytime you have someone that has performed like an all-NBA guy for multiple seasons now, which he has, maybe not consecutively, but it has been two all-NBA seasons he's had in New York. But he's also had really rotten playoff performances. It's just the reality. You know, was he hurt during the last postseason? Was he hurt going into last postseason? Yes. At a certain point, you can't lean on that as a rationale, as an excuse. He's also played really, really poorly in the playoffs when he wasn't hurt. We talked about Tibbs earlier in terms of how much he plays guys. Does he run them into the ground? Randall has been a guy that consistently has been among the league leaders in minutes. Is that why he breaks down? I don't know. Is he just not really built for the playoffs? I don't know. So from that standpoint, kind of regardless of what Randall does during the regular season, I feel like if the Knicks are in the playoffs, it's mostly about what Randall can give you in the postseason. That's a concern regardless of how well he does this season. I am concerned. I also worry a little bit about the noise factor from the standpoint of fans. I tweeted a week and a half ago, it is fascinating to watch Knicks fans react in real time to how Julius Randle is playing. From one play to the next, from one game to the next, from one shot to the next, from one turnover to the next. It feels really toxic to me. This is a guy that after some of these playoff games, fans have ripped his posters down off the wall as they exit MSG. And I remember talking to Carmelo for the retirement piece I wrote about him, having interviewed him. He was like, man, I watched that. And I'm like, thank God that's not me anymore. And, you know, he remembers what it was like to kind of be in the ringer all the time as a guy that some fans love, some fans hate. Some fans hate the style of play. Some fans hate the lack of postseason success. And I see a lot of that happening with Randall, which is interesting because he's not their best player. He's not. And we can all acknowledge that. Brunson just kind of goes about his business. Randall has had run-ins with the fans before. Randall has sounded off before about things. Randall has, you know, given the thumbs down or whatever it was last year. So it's challenging. You know, from that standpoint, you wonder where the guy's head is sometimes. I haven't seen as much of that this season. But let's be honest, too, as we talk about where his head is. They lost a game against the Bucks a couple days ago because Randall, frankly, didn't get back on defense in the last 30 seconds of a game.
After he was complaining about a shot that Jalen Brunson took when Brunson's their best guy.
That
had
too.
Like 38 in that, yeah. That moment.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of, like, where there's smoke, there's fire is always a phrase that people use. I mean, I wouldn't say that, but it's just, it always kind of feels like there's something underneath the surface here that I can't quite wrap my mind around, my head around. You get the impression that his teammates and certainly the fans are happy for him when he does well, but when he doesn't, which frankly is too frequently, whenever we talk about him a lot, you know, people want him gone. I won't say his teammates, but fans, a lot of fans do. And, you know, he's someone I've wondered for the longest, like, what would his value be elsewhere? What would someone give up for him? Because he's not on a bad contract. But I just think people wonder, like, what sort of attitude does he have around these things? Is he a good player if he's not the lead guy, if he's not one of the two lead guys? Because to me, all day long, he looks like a guy that if he's your third or your fourth option could be hugely important and hugely valuable to winning a championship. I'm just not sure as a second guy whether he can be that. And I think that's kind of the problem that the Knicks have run into with him.
I have a friend who is for the boxing space who is a massive Knicks fan. Like, and he is the embodiment of what you're talking about. The minute-to-minute texts I get about whatever's going on with the Knicks, Julius Randle is the most discussed person on those texts. Like the anger directed towards Julius Randle by Knicks fans. Yeah, look, he's earned some of it. I mean, you're getting paid pretty good money to, you know, shoot less than 30% from the floor and three. That kind of comes with the territory, especially if you sign up to play in New York. And Julius Randle did sign up to play in New York, but he is absolutely the lightning rod of that team. My panic meter, Rohan, is right around six right now, though. I mean, Again, I go back to what I said when I pointed out his stat line on Monday. That was the best game of the season, but there were still plenty of flaws in that game. Six turnovers is bad. You know, low 40s from the field is bad. 3-for-8 from three-point range is fine, but 8 three-pointers is a lot, you know, for your power forward to take. And look, I think he benefited in that game from the confusion that was going on within the Clippers. Like, they didn't know how to play team defense. They were trying to figure each other out. I want to see what Randle looks like against some of the better teams in his own conference moving forward. So I'm at about a 6 right now with Randle, who, you know, just to Herring's point, just doesn't look like he's equipped to be the number two guy on a successful team. Now, does that mean RJ Barrett can take another step forward and be the number two? I thought RJ played pretty well last night, you know, against the Clippers, and he's kind of been in and out because of injury, but he's kind of had a bit of a rhythm, you know, early on this season. So maybe RJ Barrett can take that step forward and be that number two guy opposite Jalen Brunson, because I just, if you're counting on Julius Randle to be that guy in a postseason series, I think you're asking to get beat in the first, the second round at best. I mean, look, he still doesn't react well to that kind of blindside double team. Mm-mm. Like, the Clippers threw a few of them at him last night, and it's almost like he doesn't see it coming. Like, he spins back into it.
It's like the worst part of his game most of the time.
You know, Atlanta was the first team to do that to them. Like, really, because that was the playoff series. Atlanta did that to them, and every team has gone to school on that, you know, since then, and Randle's not reacted well to it.
And he insists on those ISOs. I'd say my panic's at a 7, and I was going to put it higher, but I stopped only because I've gone very high every time. I just don't think any Knicks playoff opponent is scared of Julius Randle. I don't get the sense that anyone is concerned with Julius Randle in a playoff series, and that's what it comes down to. Like, they'll let him take his contested twos all day long. They'll let him run these ISOs all day long. I just don't think they're a good place for him. I don't think they're a good place for the Knicks. When he was struggling in that Heat series, you wanted to see him do something else to impact the game. Can he impact it defensively? Can he impact it rebounding? Can he be a screen setter? Can he find another way to impact the game? And he can't. It's like, even that Bucks game, like, he shot his way out of it a little bit at the end. He hit a couple big buckets, but that was it. Like, but then Brunson took one shot and he decided not to run back on defense. And that was that. They blew their chance to win the game. So, you know, I'm with Herring. I don't think he's on a bad contract. I think in an ideal scenario, he's your number three option, maybe even number four. Although that team would have to be pretty loaded. What bums me out is the Knicks have such good vibes everywhere else on the roster. I love Brunson. I think he's been fantastic, and he's been outstanding to start the season.
Well, do they do, though, Rowan? Because the Knicks right now, they have no shot at beating Boston, Milwaukee in the first round. I'll give it to them that maybe they can win a first-round series if they wind up 4-5. You know, they're right there. They beat Cleveland last year. They're on Brooklyn's level. You know, Atlanta, Miami, whatever team winds up in that mix. But right now, that team has no shot at beating Boston or Milwaukee in the second round. And they're just sitting there in New York hoping, you know, Joel Embiid, you know, becomes available, hoping that Karl Anthony Towns becomes available. I wouldn't bank on that happening anytime soon. The Timberwolves just beat Boston, the number one defense in the NBA. And
they went on a huge run when Cat went on the bench, by the way, which is kind of hilarious.
True. That's kind of funny. But, you know, Philadelphia's out there. They're buyers right now, not sellers. They're looking to get somebody into that mix. I don't know what the Knicks play is here. I mean, we have, you know, I'm old enough to remember, and Herring, you were covering the Knicks back then. Like, you know, how many knee-jerk moves do the Knicks make that just seem just so short-sighted? So I'm, in a way, you want to compliment them for not doing that. But
oh, absolutely.
At the same time, they are sitting here with a team that is good, with a very narrow pathway to becoming great. And I don't know what their path. Outside of tremendous organic growth, I don't know what that pathway is to get to that next level.
Go ahead, bro.
Well, I was just going to say, it comes down to if Randle is going to be part of this quote unquote superstar trade they hope to make one day or not. I don't think he necessarily
has to be. I think he
do
has
you think
to be.
So?
His contract
do you think
other alone?
Because I wonder if you try to if you
but
can
who takes
find
him
a
back?
Right if you can find a partner for Randle that gets you a contract or two, maybe a late pick or something. There's some team that could use him. And I wonder if you move on from him and accept that you might not be getting better, but maybe it's a little bit addition by subtraction. You know, maybe you just maintain the good chemistry of the team. You don't get the ire of the fans. You don't have to worry about upsetting Brunson. And that way you kind of tread water with your current team, which I do like, which I do think could make the second round. And then that way you're also kind of keeping your powder dry for that superstar trade. I wonder if it's not an easy path, but I wonder if a trade like that is out there for them.
It is nuts to think about the fact that I just looked it up. Randall's 28. Granted, he'll turn 29 in 3 weeks. he's an all NBA guy 2 out of the last 3 years.
But I mean, how much of that has to do with injuries to guys at his position, and you know,
it's a
two years he was great. Like those two years, he was really great.
Were like legitimate all NBA years. I don't think it was because so many guys were injured necessarily. Like maybe he got one all NBA team, but he would have had a lot of votes regardless. They were legitimate. Like you really can't assail those numbers that he had. And again, he's a guy that plays every night, at least during those two seasons. But I can be honest in saying that for how much good he has done in those regular seasons, he has been equally brutal in the postseasons. And there is a part of me that kind of feels like the longer the Knicks go at this with a team that actually can contend. And I would even say briefly, we had this conversation, Ro, I think maybe you wrote the story last year about we started opening conversations about like, do they have enough to win a title?
They were playing top 10 offense and defense for a while. They were in the second half of the season. Yeah.
And he was part of that. So that's the weird thing. But I can be honest in saying that looking at them and potentially going into now what would be a third postseason with this group, with this core, with Randall being either your top guy or your number two guy, it would feel a lot like Randall's kind of really determined drives and ISOs to the basket where it's like you're just putting your head down and going at it without looking at what you're doing. Like that's kind of what this would feel like, but you have to imagine the Knicks know exactly what they're doing and exactly what they're going to get out of him. The defenses get tougher, stuff gets more cramped. You know, that if you rely on really difficult shots, which Randall always has, and I remember, you know, when Michael Pena was on this podcast with us, he would always say that Julius Randle hit the most crazy circus shots during those all NBA seasons.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Like heavily contested from the corner, and you know he would make them at a clip that nobody else was, and then the playoffs hit and they don't go down. So I don't know what to make of that, but it's a really interesting question. I don't really know what sort of team is ideal for him. Obviously, one that has a ton of spacing, since that's really not his strong suit as a shooter. But again, so much of it, I have to be honest in saying, like I think teams would be more likely to roll the dice or want him back as a centerpiece or part of a trade if there weren't so many questions about his attitude. So I will give him credit at least in saying that he's generally said the right things and that he has kind of said he's going to let that stuff roll off his back. But you can say that, but then when you watch that Milwaukee game back, the last few seconds of that, it's like regardless of what you're saying at a certain point, you have to actually do it game in, game out. And at a certain point, you become more palatable to teams. He's got enough talent and enough skill to play somewhere else. His contract is not bad. Neither is Brunson's, by the way. I mean, that's a brilliant value deal for them. But yeah, I don't know what to make of it. But the panic meter for him, it's at a 7 because he always kind of has these games and these stretches where he's not great. And then he is great. Randall is like that. Barrett has been that way. It's actually a rare season where Barrett is starting the year well. It normally is the opposite. But I'll put Randall at a solid 7, I think.
All right, we're going to wrap it right there. I've been able to avoid the ambient sound of construction in my New York apartment by using the mute button as often as possible, but now it's time to pick up once again. Make sure you subscribe to the Crossover Podcast. Rate and review as well while you're there, and we will see you next week.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.